We discussed in the Chumash this past week a lot about Parshas Chukas and Parshas Balak. I just wanted to add maybe a few more points, one or two more points, that we find something interesting is that we know we read Parshas Chukas and Parshas Balak together, and I believe they're actually a very, very much connected, those two Parshas. And there's a very strong, I believe, teamwork effort that Parshas Chukas and Parshas Balak gives us for dealing with our life. We mentioned at length that Parshas Chukas is the realization that we don't understand the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We just don't understand why things happen, why did people die, and why do people get sick, and why do people lose their parnasa. And there's a lot of things in this world we just don't understand, we don't comprehend. And that's Parshas Chukas. Paradum is the thing we don't understand, and we come to terms with it at least once a year. We remind ourselves that we don't understand the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then we come to Parshas Balak. Parshas Balak, the Torah opens up with Vayar Balak ben Tzippor. Balak saw, Eis Kalasha saw Yisrael HaMayri, all that happened to the Jewish people. And we also know there's another parasha, and this is I heard it from Rebbe from Goldberg, but I'll be myself a little bit, where he points out there's another time where the Torah talks about another non-Jew who experiences a episode, and it's Vayishma Yisrael. Yisrael heard. What's the difference between Yisrael and Balak? Because Vayishma Yisrael heard, he was blown away, he was mesmerized, he was so taken by Hashem, he was so taken by Bnei Yisrael, he wanted to join the Jewish people, or become close to them. Balak sees miracles, and he runs the opposite direction. He decides, not only don't I want to join the people, I'm actually afraid of these people, to the point where I'm going to rebel and fight against these people. Two opposite extremes from really the similar idea. They both saw the same experience. They both saw Nisim and Nefilos from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They saw Yad Hashem. And one of them said, this is where I want to be. And one said, no, this is where I want to fight. And I think that's really the message for all of us when we're presented with dilemmas. There's two options we can take. We can embrace HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we can try to find ways to come close to Him, or we can run away from Him. We can revolt against Him. We can run away. We can rebel. We could say, okay, Hashem, I don't like the deck of cards you dealt me. I'm going the opposite direction. It's all about our perception. It's all about how we look at a situation. We can both, with two people can go through the exact same experience, and two people will come out very differently. I was talking to a person that had to speak at a graduation a few days ago. You know, when you have to speak at a graduation this year, there's so many different messages you want to relate to a graduating class. So I mentioned this idea that two people can go through the exact same experience. You have two kids that went through the same, you know, corona lockdown Zoom schooling. And one outlook is saying, well, that was such an amazing experience. And one could have said, oh, I had a horrible year. I couldn't get together with my friends. It's all a question of how we look at it. Now, many times in life, we're dealt with situations that we don't love, we're not thrilled with, we don't like. But the question just is, if we are going to focus, are we going to look in the good or are we going to look at the bad? There's a famous story, I've said it over here many times, it's worth mentioning, with the Blazer Silver. Blazer Silver was one of the great Rabbonim here in America that both before and after the Holocaust was very, very involved in helping and saving Jews from the Holocaust. And the story goes that he met a Jew and he was trying to convince him to come daven. Later on, they found out this Jew was Simon Wiesenthal, but he was trying to convince him to come join them to come daven. And Simon Wiesenthal told Rabbi Silver, I will never pray again after what I saw in the camps. So he said, what happened? So he told him, he said, I remember when I was in the camps, and there was one Jew who smuggled in a sitter. And the Jews were waiting online, long lines out the door, literally, to be able to use the sitter. But he charged everyone a small fee. Everyone that wanted to use the sitter had to pay whatever little bread they had, soup, water, it's not even water, soup, whatever little food they had from the Nazis, they had to part with in order to use the sitter. And Simon Wiesenthal said, at that moment I realized that I want to have nothing to do with prayer. Because if someone has the audacity to charge Jews a fee to use a prayer book in this situation, like that, in the Holocaust, in the concentration camps, I want nothing to do with this religion. So Blazer Silver listened to his argument, and Blazer Silver said to him, you're right, but why don't you look at it differently? Why don't you say, look at the other Jews. Look at all those hundreds of Jews that lined up, waited, gave up the little bit of food that they had, they parted with it just so they can dine with the sitter. It's all a question of how you look at it, said Blazer Silver. Do we look at it from an optimistic or do we look at it from a pessimistic? So that's the contrast between Balak and Yisrael. Balak saw HaKadosh Baruch Hu and was turned off, while Yisrael saw HaKadosh Baruch Hu and decided to embrace it. That's, I think, one very important message that we take away from the connection between Chukas and Balak. But I think there's another idea. There's another very important message that I think we need to walk away with from Parshas Balak is we have to realize, what is the recipe for success? Right, we all spend our life trying to figure out how can we raise good children and good grandchildren and see nachas and dairies. What's the recipe? What's the magic? Now, again, any good parent and any good educator knows there really is no magical recipe. But I believe we all agree that there are two partners in raising successful children in this world. One would be parents. And when I say parents, I include the extended family, which today is grandparents. I'm a big believer today that grandparents play an essential role in the children's education, because we have a world today where parents and grandparents are much more connected. Yes, yes, Jake, that's true too. But I was coming from a different angle, more like, you know, today we have technology, so even if your kids don't live near you, we have the Zoom and we have phone time. I know my kids speak to my in-laws more, you know, than I ever spoke to my grandparents. My kids know how to use the phones better than me, and they're texting and they're WhatsApping. You know, there's a whole different generation today. Today we can stay in touch with the next generation, and I think it's terrific. For those people that are against it, I happen to disagree. I think we have to embrace technology. If we can keep us closer to our grandchildren, I think it's a fantastic idea. But I think that's one team, is we'll call that the parents and the grandparents. And there's another team that I like to call the yeshivas and the shuls. And we see this, I believe, in this week's parsha. Parsha's Balak, every single time Bilam tries to give us a curse, we know it ends up backfiring and turns into a bracha. But what was some of his messages? So the first thing is Rashi tells us that he says, Ki miroish tzur merenu migvois ashurenu. I think that's the pasuk. And Rashi over there says that there's no way you're going to be able to curse the Jewish people, because they have a Messiah. They have parents, they have avos v'imos. So what Rashi's telling us is that we're not, as Reb Sheps, one of the Rosh Hashivas in Taira V'Das, as Asal explained, we're not a fly-by religion. It's not like we started this movement yesterday. We have a long, beautiful history dating back to our avos and our imos that gave us and continue to give us our Jewish heritage. And therefore, Hashem says to Bilam, it's not going to work. These people have such a beautiful Messiah. They have been endowed with such wonderful values from parents, grandparents, great-grandparents, back to the Avos Imois. They're untouchable. Don't bother. You're not going to be able to attack such a nation. You have a new movement that pops up yesterday. They have no Messiah. And we see this in the world around us today. These new movements that pop up, they have no guidance. There's no leadership. They last for 2 days and they fall apart. Then they're fighting for power. That's not the way Judaism is. We have a religion for thousands of years based on a Messiah. And we have passed down from parents to children. It's a beautiful thing. And if Hashem says to Bilam, wait, don't waste your time. It's not going to happen. So that's, I think, one lesson. Now, Kosh Baruch Hu is telling Bilam, as long as our parents and grandparents' Messiah is strong in our children, we're untouchable. As long as we continue to give over to our children and to our grandchildren what we picked up from our parents and previous generations, then we're untouchable. That element can't be affected because we have that strong Messiah. We have that legacy that's passed down from Sinai. Our parents heard it from their parents, heard it from their parents, all the way up to Moshe Rabbeinu. That's something that no, other religions don't have. Other religions were made up on the spot, you know. Yeah, Muhammad had a nevuah. Yashka had a nevuah. These were made up religions with no testimonial, no witnesses. We have an authentic Messiah dating back to Kabbalah Satayra, dating back to the times of Moshe Rabbeinu. And therefore, he's telling us that as long as that's intact, as long as we have the Messiah from our parents and our grandparents, they can't touch us. But there's another, I believe, element to the equation. You know, the pasuk tells us Matoivu Halecha Yaakov Mishkan Nesech Yisrael. So the Gemara says in Sanhedrin. And Osher Weiss spoke about this in his drasha, very beautiful. I urge everyone who didn't listen to it. Here he speaks about this idea, where we know the Gemara tells in Sanhedrin, this is referring to the Batei Knesiyos and the Batei Midrashos. So I believe what the Gemara is telling us like this: Hashem says to Bilam, you can't hit them on their other element. Their other partner is the shuls and the schools. That's the second shittif that's in a child's success. Raising good children, you have to have a partnership between parents and the schools. We raise our children at home as best as we can, and then we kind of give them over to the yeshivas and even the shuls. We send our kids to shul, and there's rabbanim in the shuls, and there's programs in the shul. So our shuls and our schools are the second half of our children's education. So as long as our batei kedushin and our batei midrashos are functioning the way they're supposed to, we're also, Hashem says to Bilam, don't waste your time. It's not going to go anywhere. They're in, Klal Yisrael is intact. The team, the shutvis is functioning properly. The schools, together with the parents, together with the Messiah, we become an untouchable nation. And I think that's the recipe for success with children. When we raise our children at home with the proper values, and then we say to ourselves, okay, I did as much as I can as a parent, now I'm giving them over to the yeshiva, giving them over to the shuls. And I think many children grow up with a very good relationship with their shul rav, and I think it's beautiful. You can grow up with it with a impact from your shul rav or for the rabbanim in your neighborhood, and can really make a difference in a child's growth. So we have to realize that we as parents can only do so much, and then we give them over, we share them, and we're a team effort. You know, we work together to try to breed a future generations of Klal Yisrael. And therefore, Bilam says, Hashem says to Bilam, forget it. But the Knesset is about the Midrashas. It's not going to happen. I pointed out that this year, we kind of bridged the two together because our homes turned into Bate Knesset and Bate Midrashas. Our homes became our new shuls and our new schools through Zoom and these other ways of technology, and therefore we had to bring the two together. But in really, in theory, as long as those two things are functioning the way they're supposed to, HaKadosh Baruch Hu reminds us that we're untouchable. But as we get back into our shuls and into our schools, again, I would urge with a lot of care and medical precaution, as we get back to our mikvahs, we have to realize how powerful they are. Our mekaymes hakadosh about the kedushas and about the midrashas. These are the second tool that we have to A, fight the nations from attacking us, and B, it's part of the recipe for success for the future generations. It's not enough just to raise our children at home. When Jews first came to America, they learned this the hard way, that just raising them with a Messiah at home doesn't work. We have to have schools, and we can't just have shuls, we have to have schools as well. That's why until they started having real Talmud Torahs in America, the success was not very high for religious Judaism. It's a team effort. I always tell this to parents, schooling is a team effort. It's not just the Rebbe, it's not just the parent. We do together. We work together to produce a beautiful, beautiful child that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be proud of. And that's what I think we learned in this week's parasha, that the recipe for success for us as a nation to stay strong and not to be affected by the world around us and not to be able to be brought down by Goyim who want to destroy us. And there's no shortages of nations of the world who can't wait to bring us down. But as long as our two components are strong, our Messiah, we're giving over to our children, to our grandchildren, the way to live, and we're living examples of what they can be proud of and what they can emulate, and we have our children enrolled in wonderful schools, and we have wonderful shuls and local rabbanim that we can turn to, we can get guidance from, then the Torah tells us in this week's parasha, we attack a untouchable, we cannot be harmed, we cannot be affected. There's a famous story that everyone says over in this week's parasha. I don't know if it's true or not, but everyone says it over, so that's probably right that it's not true. But in any case, it makes for a very famous story in this week's parasha. It can be brought out in two ways. I said it over 2 years ago, I said it over one way, but then I saw someone said it over a little differently. And in this week's parasha, we learn about the power of a bracha and the power of a klala. There's a famous story that during the early years of the Holocaust, when the Baron Cutler was already here in America, they found that there were a group of rabbanim that were captured by the Nazis in Italy. And Rabbi Aaron was desperately trying to figure out a way to save these rabbanim in Italy. So he contacted his good friend, Mr. Irving Bunim, who was his partner, good friend. They did a lot of amazing work for Klal Yisrael together. And he asked Irving Bunim, is there any way we can perhaps save these rabbanim in Italy? So Irving Bunim decided that perhaps the best option would be is to reach out to the mafia in New York. And perhaps the mafia in New York can be able to have some input and affect the Italian, what was going on in Italy under Mussolini. So they arrange a meeting for Rabar and Mr. Irving Bunim to meet with the head mafia, a guy named Joe Banana. That was his name. So they come into the meeting, Rabar and Cutler and Mr. Irving Bunim, they're sitting across the table from the head of the mafia in New York. And this head of the mafia asked Mr. Irving Bunim, who's the old man? So he says, you know, just like you're the godfather, he's the Jewish godfather. And Mr. Irving Bunim and Mr. Banana liked that a lot. He got a chuckle out of it. And he tells him, so Baron relates what he wants him to do. And he says, but I want something from the rabbi. I want the rabbi to give me a blessing that I die an old age and I die in my own bed. For being in the mafia, that's a big bracha because usually you get shot down by a million people trying to kill you. You don't know, you're not always zeichet to a long life and you're not zeichet to die in your bed. But Baron promised him. Baron said, yes, I promise you, you'll die in your own bed and you'll die at a ripe old age. And he said, okay. And about 2 weeks later, this fellow was able to take care of the release of the Rabbanim in Italy. Now, if you stop and think for a second, anyone who knows anything about the mafia, you know one thing, is that if you promise and you make a promise to them and it doesn't come true, you know that's a death sentence. And Rabbi Aaron knew that also. Rabbi Aaron wasn't a foolish person. So it means Rabbi Aaron was willing to put his life on the stake to say that I'm going to guarantee that was going to happen. Fast forward 5 years after Baron Cutler died, a limousine pulls up to Lakewood Yeshiva with two well-dressed Italian fellows come out and they want to speak to Rabbi Cutler. So Reb Schneier comes out and he says, can I help you? He says, we were looking for the rabbi who promised my father long life because my father's retiring from the business and we're taking over and we want the same blessing that my father got. So Reb Schneier explained to them, he said, I'm sorry, my father was a very great man. He was a big rabbi. I'm not such a big rabbi. I can't promise you what my father promised. The way the story ends is that this fellow died at the ripe old age of 97 in his bed in Arizona. That's the power of a bracha from a gadol like a Baron Kudla, who mamish put his life, literally, he put his life on the line to give a bracha to the head of the mafia. Now, that's the way the story goes. Michael, what's the real version?
Hold on, Rabbi, one second.
I was waiting for your rebuttal. I saw this story in many different books. I've even heard this b'shem Reb Moti Kamenetsky. So if you want to talk to him about it, if he can tell you if the story is true or not, you can ask him. But I've seen this in many, many different writings. I saw it in an article written by Reb Moti Kamenetsky. I've read it in numerous books. But in any case, whether the story is true or not, I don't know. But it's a powerful story about what a gadol is willing to do on behalf of Klai Yisrael, really put his life out there. You're not going to find too many politicians today that are willing to stick their neck out like that for anyone. They'll tell you they will, but they won't. The politicians today don't care enough about their constituents to put their life on the line. They're not even willing to put their job on the line. They're willing just to bend over backwards just to get reelected, but they don't really care about the people they're caring for. That's the difference between a real gold. And I was telling this to someone yesterday. I said, you know, we're living in a world of politics. Everything today is political, even the medical world. You know, what medicine says is political. I just want people to realize when Rabbanim tell people to do things or not to do things, again, certain Rabbanim, can't say all Rabbanim, the Rabbanim are not doing it because they're power-hungry, control people. When Rabbanim closed shuls, it wasn't because they're sitting in their house, you know, gleaming and saying, I'm so lucky I have power over communities. They're doing it because they really care about your life and the life of other Jews. Politicians, I'm not so sure about. But at least certain Rabbanim that I know of and I respect, I know deep down that when they made their decisions to what to do, they're saying it's because they love every single Jew more than we can imagine. They care, and they don't want people dying. And it's not a control thing. When these Rabbanim decided that it's not safe to go out, it wasn't because they want to control you and they get pleasure out of being able to control Jews around the world. Because they genuinely care about us. Like similar to the story with Baron Kudla, who Mamish was willing to risk his life, literally, risk his life to save Jews. Jews he didn't even know, Rabbanim in Italy, on the other side of the world. That's the difference between a real gadol and the difference between the politicians that we're living with today. Yeah, Michael, what's the rebuttal? He's not here. Okay, so we're going to start the Gemara. Okay, today's learning should be L'schus for Esther Sarah Bas Chaya Pes. Okay, we're holding over here in the sugya of women and Mila.
Rabbi, yes, Mike. Rabbi, I wouldn't let you go. I am here, but if you recall, I told you I'm driving my daughter up the campus.
Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize.
The reception isn't so great.
I apologize.
So I apologize.
No problem.
Thank you.
Do you have a rebuttal on the story?
So far, sounds good.
Okay. I thought you told me from someone that this story wasn't true. I couldn't remember if that was the case. Okay. In any case, well, let's get back to the sugya. So holding over in the Gemara.
No, the Goral HaGros story.
Oh, the Goral HaGros story is not true. Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you,
right,
Michael. Okay.
That's the one that's not true. That at least that's what Rav Malkiel's.
Got it. Okay, thank you. Thank you for clarifying that. I appreciate it. Okay, so holding over here in the Gemara of Avodah Zarah, we're trying to figure out whether or not a woman is allowed to perform a milah. So let's go back to the Gemara. Very difficult Gemara. We started it last week. We got to go through it again. We'll probably have to go through it again next week. It's a very difficult Gemara, but let's try to work our way through. Gemara of Avodah Zarah Chav Zayin Amalaf says the Gemara, Itamar. Minayin lemila boi v'kechav m'shipsula. How do you know a guy can't do a milah? You know, we'll have to talk about this also separately, because today I want to focus on women and children giving milah. Both from a halachic and a lomdish standpoint, women and children. So the Gemara said this: Minayin lemila boi v'kechav m'shipsula. How do you know mila with a guy is possible? Doribe bar popa mishmei derav omar. Because it says in the pasuk, va'ata es brisi tishmor, and you, my treaty, you should guard. So Rashi told us that what? That those people that are mitzvah in the mitzvah of mila, they're able to give mila. And since the guy has no mitzvah of mila, he's not able to give the mila. Rabbi Yechon says a different pasuk. It says, he mol. So what makes it Rashi? He mol yimol. He who is gemalt should do a bris. He mol. He who has a bris, yimol, he should do a bris. So we have two different psukim that discuss who's able to give a bris. Either we learn from the pasuk Atas brisi tishma that you have to be in the commandment of bris mila, or in the treaty of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or we learn out that he that has a bris can give a bris. Says the Gemara, Ma'i binai, what's the difference between the two pshatim? Says the Gemara, arve mohol v'givnune mohol. The difference would be arve mohol, if you have Arabs that are gemalt, or givnune mohol, or givnunim that were gemalt. Who are givnunim? So we'll see in a few minutes, it's a big machloikis, we're showing them who givnunim are. Rashi learned Givnune Mohol was a tribe, was a community, an ummah, a nation, whatever nation you want to call them. They happened to be a nation that decided to give bris milah. They're not obligated, but they decided, either for medical reasons, for their own religious reasons, they were an entire nation, an ummah, that gave themselves bris milah. So why is that work out? The Gemara says, if it's about having a bris milah, these people are all gemalt. So if they have a bris, so they can give a bris. So they would be able to give a bris milah. But Uman Domer is Brisi Tishmar, but if you hold, you have to be commanded by Hashem Lekka. This nation was not commanded by Hashem. So that would be one nafkamina the Gemara suggests.
But the B'nai Yishmael don't have a mitzvah meal.
Ah, good. We're going to talk about B'nai Yishmael in a few minutes. Very good. We're going to discuss today B'nai Yishmael a little bit more, how they work into this equation. We mentioned it a little bit last week based on a Rambam, which we'll see more about today. So the Gemara continues. The Gemara says this is not true. Frag the Gemara, Uleman de Omar, Himol, Yimol. And according to the Man de Omar that says it's Himol, Yimol, Ikka. Is it true that you'd be able to give a bris if a guy got a bris? But tonight we looked in the Mishnah in the Darim, third parak. Kainim, a guy makes a neder. She'eni nenem min harelim. I'm not going to allow to get pleasure from anyone that's an oral. So the halach is, the Mishnah says, Mutar ba'arli Yisrael. He's allowed to get pleasure from anyone that's an oral who's Jewish. But v'asar b'moyli avdi yichavim. He's not allowed to get pleasure from those people that are gemalt to guy, a guy that has a milah. I thought the guy has a milah. If a guy has a milah, it's considered gemalt. And I said, I'm not allowed to get pleasure from arelim. Says the Gemara, Alma, what do we see? Alfal Gav de Mahali, that even though he has a bris, we don't consider a non-Jew's bris a bris. So therefore, says the Gemara, even als himol yimol, a guy would not be included. And that's why we pass in halacha l'maisa, but Lined will talk more about this, that a guy is absolutely possible from giving a bris. Why? Because he's not as brisi tishmar, and he's not even himol yimol. Even if a guy would go out and get circumcised, he still wouldn't be able to give bris. Why? Because he's not included himol yimol. Now I'm not getting. Why not? Oh, very good. I was about to get to that. So I'm not getting into that question. But if you want to know more about that question that Seth is bringing out, that Tosfos and Avodah Zarah asks this kasha. Seth is asking that you can't bring Urias from things in the Nedarim. Nedarim, the Gemara always says we go achar loshem bnei adam. Go after the way people talk. You don't go after what's real. So therefore, what's the right? So Tosfos and Avodah Zarah asked that. Kasha Ayin Shom, if you want to discuss it more. We mentioned actually a very cute tshuva from the Debrecen Rav a few weeks ago in Ashir, where a guy makes a neder, I'm not going to talk to you anymore. A guy makes a neder, I'm not talking to my friend anymore. So they asked the Debrecen Rav, are you allowed to talk on the phone also? Is that called talking? Maybe talking only means real, verbal, me to you, talking on the phone, because the way the science is, it's not really talking. So he also says, no, by Nedarim, it's Dibur Lashem Bnei Adam. What do people mean when they say, I'm not going to talk to you? A lot of times when I say someone asked me something or someone called me, I don't always mean they called me. Sometimes I mean they texted, they emailed, they WhatsApped. Today, that's all nichlal in technology. If a guy would make a neder, I'm not allowed to talk to you anymore. Would I be allowed to text you? I would assume not, because Dibur Tayyib Lashem Bnei Adam, by Nedarim, Holcha Acha Lashem Bnei Adam. And when we say talk, we don't only mean talk. Who talks today anymore? Today we mean, you know, whatever talking means. So Tosfos has that kasha on this Gemara. If you want to take a look over there in Avodah Zarah, I was hoping no one would bring it up, but it's a good kasha. Ayin Tosfos and Avodah Zarah over there. So the Gemara continues, and the Gemara says, let's try another nafka mina. Ela Ike Beinayu Yisrael Shemeso Achim Achimas Mila. Another nafka mina between Rav's reason and the B'Yechimon's reason would be, let's say you have a person whose two brothers before him died because they had circumcision. So the halach is the third brother is not allowed to have a bris milah. So there would be the nafkamina. Why, says the Gemara? The Gemara explains. The man damar atas brisi tishmar ikka. If it's about being commanded in bris, this guy's definitely commanded. He'd even have to give his own children a bris milah. He has a ptur, but he's technically chayit. But uleman damar himol yimol ikka. But if you're going to work with himol yimol, this guy is not gemat. Lamaisa, he doesn't have a bris milah. If one of the conditions to give a bris is to have a bris, he doesn't have a bris. Now, he might not be mechoyev in a bris, but at the end of the day, he doesn't have a bris. So that's what the Gemara thinks would be a nafkimina. Says the Gemara, not true. Lamadomar, himol yimol leka. And you tell me if you hold it, it's himol yimol, he's not included vatran. The same Mishnah in the dark. Kainim she'ani nenem imimulim. Guy makes a neder, I'm not allowed to get pleasure from anyone that is gemalt. So Allah is, he's asa b'areli Yisrael. He's not allowed to get pleasure from those that are already Yisrael. Umutar. He's allowed to get pleasure from the goyim that have milah. Alma says the Gemara, what do we see? Avagav deloy mahale, even though he did not get a bris, keman demal yedamya. He's considered as if he has a bris. And this we need to talk a little bit about today. Why do we look at an oral shemese achiv as keman demal yedamya? He doesn't have a bris.
What about a woman?
We're going to get to that in the next slide. That's the next line of the Gemara I want to get to. Good. So we're going to contrast a meisei achiv to a lady. So let's keep that in mind. The Gemara says right now that an arul shemeisei achiv is considered himal yimol, which means he can give a bris. Now we need to figure out why is he considered himal yimol. A meisei, the guy doesn't have a bris. He's not gemalt. So the Gemara says, ela ikki b'nayu, the Gemara takes his third try. What's the nafkamina ikki b'nayu isha? Why? The man da'amar va'ates b'yisi tishmar. If you hold, it's all about being commanded leka. Women are not mechuyiv in milah. The isha lav bas mili. She's not mechuyev, not for herself and not for her children. Now we mentioned if Moshe Feinstein asks in Dibris Moshe, but if you hold she's chayiv als bezdin, and you hold like the sefer hamikne, that bezdin doesn't just mean the Beis Din, it means every Jew, and you hold that women are exempt only from the obligation as a parent, but not exempt from the obligation as Beis Din. So then what's the Gemara saying? Women are not in the mitzvah of milah. Yes, they are. They have a tzivui to give bris milah to a child that never got from their parent. So Reb Moshe has this kasha in Dibris Moshe. It's a good kasha. So the Gemara, Reb Moshe Weiss also talks about it in Menachos Asher, this har. But okay, we'll leave that for now. But says the Gemara, Laman Domer, Himol Ika, the Isha, command the Mal Yadami. The Gemara says, an Isha, not true. Ulman Domer, Himol Yimol Ika, the Isha, command the Mal Yadami. Zog the Gemara, listen to this. That if it's about being Gemalt, an Isha is considered Gemalt. How do we understand that? Why is an Isha considered Gemalt? So we mentioned last week, Tub Shatim. One from the Ben Yoyada. The Ben Yoyada said that Isha is considered Gemalt because Ishtay Kigufa. Since her husband is Gemalt, it's Ishtay Kigufa. I'm not sure what that exactly is supposed to mean. Now, Rabbi Yosef Engel has two pshatim, and he takes back one pshat. Rabbi Yosef Engel in two different places has two different pshatim. In one place, Rabbi Yosef Engel wants to suggest that the command of Mal Yadami is the pshat, that she doesn't need the well, let's go back. How do you understand? One way of learning it, says of Yosef Engel, is that Lamaisa, she doesn't have an Arla. If you understand the mitzvah of Mila is Hasaras HaArla, it's remove the Arla, says Yosef Engel, she doesn't have an Arla. She's Arla-less. So she's Kemanda Malyadamya. A man that was born with an Arla needs to remove the Arla. So until he removes that Arla, he's Kemanda Loi Malyadamya. But Zach, Rabbi Yosef Engel, and Isha is Kemanda Malyadamya because she has the same outcome. She's an Arla-less person. So therefore, it's command the Mal Yadami. Now again, this is going to take us back to a sugi which we learned many weeks ago, months ago. Noilid Mohol. Let's say someone who's
already... It's true, but a Nachri that was circumcised. He no longer has a Arl.
Right. That Luchay would be the case. If that's all we look at, so then as long as the Arl is removed, so let's say someone's Noilid Mohol. Let's say someone was born already circumcised. So then Luchay would feel this, he would be considered command the Mal Yadami. Now, he takes this pshat back. He doesn't like this pshat. But let's just focus on this pshat for a second. If this would be the pshat for an Isha, the reason why an Isha is command the Mal Yadamye, it would not help us explain why a Noiled, why a brother of two brothers who died earlier is considered command the Mal Yadamye. The Gemara right before us told us that if you have a situation of Meso Achimach Masmila, so the third brother is not going to have a Masmila, he's considered command the Mal Yadamye. The question is why? So if you're going to use the Yosef Engel's lumnus that he said by Isha, because Lamaisa he's now Arlalist, it's just not true. This boy, the third brother, is sitting there with an Arla attached to him. He needs to get that Arla removed. So L'chayr, according to Yosef Engel's reason of why an Isha's command the Mal Yadame, because L'maisa, she now has no Arla, that would not work to explain why Meisei Achiv is considered command the Mal Yadame.
So I'm just going... Well, we say Onus Rachman of Patri, so we could view it as... Well, he gets credit for the... First of all, maybe just because he has the Arla there doesn't mean it's the status of an Arla.
Okay, that we're going to talk about in a few minutes. Machlokes Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam. What exact status does this Meisei Achiv have? But I'm just saying
the Mishnah in the Dorim, the Latin, the second Mishnah, the Gemara quoted,
right?
Yisrael. How do you know that's referring to a Mumar?
Yes, 100%. That's a big discussion, which we'll hopefully come back to a little bit later today. It's a Machlokes Rashi. We're going to talk about it a little bit more. Machlokes Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam and Yevamos. What's exactly the halachic status? But I'm just pointing out Pashut. If you're going to borrow the lumnus from Isha, I don't see how you can directly apply it to Meisei Achiv. Again, you might tell me Meisei Achiv is a different lumnus. You tell me Meisei Achiv is Oynis and this, that. I'm not disagreeing. I'm saying if you use Rabbi Yosef Engel's logic by Isha, it's a tough sell by Meisei Achiv. Now, Rabbi Yosef Engel has another pshat, which we saw last week. Rabbi Yosef Engel's other pshat was that she has the same kedusha, meaning a boy. The way a boy gets his kedusha is by removing the Arla. A girl doesn't need that. She's born naturally b'kedusha. She's born b'kedusha independently. She doesn't need a maisa to make her part of Am Yisrael. She's born part of Am Yisrael right away. That's the other way Rabbi Yosef Engel wants to explain. Now, if that's true, I think it's going to be a hard sell also to explain by Meisei Achiv. This boy is like any other boy. Boys need to become part of Am Yisrael, kedusha Yisrael, Idea Mila. So you're going to tell me that this boy doesn't need it? Again, I'm not saying you can't. You'll tell me alone that since this boy can't, so Behechuch, he now becomes like a girl who can't. It's the same idea. Maybe. I'm just saying it's a little more geschmacker to understand it by a case of an Isha where it's Pasha not possible versus a case by a boy who can't due to medical strains. I'm believing that we'll talk about more this alumnus. Now, I didn't continue to photocopy and I apologize, but if you remember the Gemara continued, the Gemara had a kasha from Tzipora. Frank the Gemara, how can anyone say a lady can't do milah? I would not see pirate did bris milah. So the Gemara gave two answers. One answer was someone else did the bris milah. And the second answer of the Gemara was she started it and Moshe finished it. Again, we'll talk much more about that hopefully in another shiur. But the first answer of the Gemara was what? Someone else did the bris milah. So we mentioned last week a kasha from Reb Chaim Kanievsky, and we'll later see today others asked it before him. Who was the other person? Who was the other person who did the bris milah? So Reb Chaim Kanievsky suggested that the other person who did the bris milah was Moshe Rabbeinu's older son. Gershom did the bris. Because as we'll see today, the Shulchan Aruch Paskin is based on the Rambam that a katan is allowed to perform a milah. Says Reb Chaim Kanievsky, that's where he got it from. He got it from this story, since the Gemara told us that Tzipori didn't do the bris. Someone else did the bris. Who's the someone else? She's in the middle of the desert. There's no Jews there. Who could have done the bris?
He's allowed to do it on his father?
What?
He's allowed to do it on his father? What about Chabur?
No, he did it for his brother. Right? Gershom did it for Eliezer. Gershom did it for Eliezer. Master Moshe Ben Hussan. Right? That's what he did the bris milah. So therefore, Zok to Chaim Kanievsky, this is the Makar. Now, there's another option which the Shagasayu discusses, based on the Rambam in number 2. Let's read the Rambam inside. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Molochim Perek Yudok, the Rambam.
And by the way, Rabbi, yes, other thing regarding Chaim's Kasha, it would be a problem if it would be reversed. We learned in the Halacha Chair, if it would be the younger brother doing it for the older brother, that may be a problem of Kibbutz Avein.
We mentioned such a possibility. Yeah, we rejected it. I think we rejected Halacha Maisa, that there's anyone would have a problem with the younger sibling. We discussed a Shaila, even can a grandchild give grandparents medical care, to which almost all the Achronim agreed would be permissible. So I would assume Achim Agadah will probably be the same.
It wasn't a Kasha, it was a senior moment.
Again, it might not be a kash anyways, because as we learned in the shir, if there's a tzairich, if there's a reason, like he's going to die, that would be a heter either way. But okay, in any case, if we look in the Rambam, Hilchos Malachim, Perek Yud, Dr. Rambam, Amru Chachom, Chazal said, Shebenei Keturah, the Bnei Keturah, who are the Bnei Keturah? Shehem Zarei Shel Avram, they are the children of Avram Avinu, Shebo Achar Yishmol V'Yitzchak. They were born after Yishmol and Yitzchak, Chayovim B'Mila. The Rambam sheet is that all the Bnei Keturah, all the descendants of the Bnei Keturah are Chai v'Mila, because they are children of Avram Avinu. And the Tzivay of Mila was not just for Avram Avinu and his children, it was for Bnei Keturah as well. So the Rambam, v'hoyul v'nis arvu hayuim Bnei Yishmol b'Bnei Keturah. And since today there's a big mix between the Bnei Yishmol and the Bnei Keturah, yischayvu hakol b'Mila b'Shmini. Now everyone, both Bnei Yishmol and Bnei Keturah, are all Chai v'Shmini in Mila b'Shmini, v'ei neherog in aleim, they don't get killed over it. Now, these last three words of the Rambam are a huge discussion of what the Rambam means. Not for our sugya today, but it's a big discussion. Look at the Noisei Kelim over there. What do I want with this Rambam? The Rambam is very clear that the Bnei Keturah and the Bnei Shmal are all Mechuyiv and Mila. So according to this Rambam, says the Shagasai, it's not a Kasha. Who gave the Bris Mila to Moshe's son? A Ben Keturah or a Ben Yishmal? What's the big deal? There's a whole, again, the Kasha was there were no Jews. You don't need Jews. All you need is someone that's mitzvah and milah. And since the Rambam told us that Bnei Yishmol and Bnei Keturah are mitzvah and milah, so beautiful, we have a whole list of people that could have done the bris milah. That's the Shagasai's answer based on this Rambam. Now, if you look in the Ritva and Avodah Zarah, on this Gemara, the Ritva asks on the Gemara before, if you remember the Gemara said that there was this, the nafkamina between Himol and Ato would be the Arvei Mohol and the Givnuni. Who are the Givnuni? So Rashi says over there, the Ritva number 3, Pish Rashi, Givnuni Uma Mahula. It's a nation that gives bris milah. Ube medrash the givnuni va'arve b'bnei keturah. But there's a medrash that says that the givnuni and the arave they're b'nei keturah. Frekter itva v'ikasha. Toch amin and the kimon lay mifka the afagav the lay mal the afagav the malikim and the lay mal yadame. Frekter itva. How can you tell me that the givnuni are considered b'nei keturah and the gemara rejected givnuni? The gemara said givnuni cannot give a bris milah to anyone. Frekter itva. Why? Vilu ba'alma aminan as bisi hefel rabbis b'nei keturah. I thought b'nei keturah are considered mitzvah and bris milah. V'yesh loymer enfed the ritva that he al b'nei keturah levadom. This is the sheet of Rashi in Sanhedrin, that when we say b'nei keturah mechuyev was only that first generation. The first generation. Avol zarom ein b'nei milah. Meaning the first group of children that were born from Avram Avinu, they had a chiyev milah. Next generation, no. When it says in the Torah for future generations, that was only Yitzchak's children. But not for Yishmael's children, and not for Keturah's children. So according to the Ritva, and that's also the opinion of Rashi and Sanhedrin, the Bnei Keturah and Bnei Yishmael are only the first generation. So,
I mean, if according to the Rambam, if it doesn't hold like this, how do you reconcile the entering the bris, the relationship of the bris with
between Hashem and Bnei Israel relative to these.
Right, right. Yeah. According to the Rambam, we'll see there are still nafkaminas. But Pashup Shad, according to the Rambam, when we keep on talking about Bris Milah, just us, it's not really true. It's us and many of our cousins, the Yishma'elim and the Bnei Keturah, according to the Rambam. The Rosh, the Tosis of Rosh in Sanhedrin has a third Shita. I didn't put it down, but the Tosis Rosh Shita is Bnei Keturah and Bnei Yishma'el were Chuyv up till Matan Torah. After Matan Torah, they're done. So till Matan Torah, they were just like us. After Matan Torah, then it's just the Jewish experience. But the Rambam sheet is very important. According to the Rambam, it comes out that the Bnei Keturah and the Bnei Shmuel are Mechuyev Mil. So why is this Rambam important for us? Because according to this Rambam and according to the Tais Sirash, we can answer up the kash that we started off with. Who gave the bris? Who else was Mechuyev Mil at that time? The answer was Bnei Keturah, Bnei Shmuel. So according to the Rambam, Bnei Keturah and Bnei Shmuel are still chayiv. According to the Tais Sirash, before Matan Torah, they were still chayiv. So beautiful. They were the when the Gemara says someone else did the bris mil, who was the someone else? It couldn't have been a guy. The answer was there's Bnei Keturah and Bnei Shmuel. That's the Teretz.
If you're willing to bear the difference between pre-Matan Torah and post-Matan Torah, why don't we just say that pre-Matan Torah, a woman could do it?
Yeah, that's probably the simplest.
Later on in our parents, in this context of Mila, in the Torah is five shalacha.
Right.
By C-section.
Right, that would have been the simple answer to the Gemara's Kasha about how Tzipori did it. The Gemara's Kasha, I Tzipori, the answer is Tzipori was before Matan Torah, leave me alone, right? That would have been the simple answer. Apparently the Gemara didn't want to go that route. I'm not sure why, but the Gemara felt that there must be another answer. However, if you look at number 3 in the Sefer, Avoid the Berura, which Michael can give you a background on the Sefer, but we've spoken about the Sefer before. It's a great Sefer, and Avoid the Zara. So he's bothered with this Kasha.
He wants, Yitzhak Mitnick is the one who does it, and there's a bunch of Kailo guys that are both in Eretz Yisrael in America that are the ones who write it.
And I don't even get a cutback from that, okay? I don't even get free advertisement for that. But in any case, it's a great Sefer.
No, I get the cut, Rabbi.
Okay, it's a great Sefer. It's a wonderful Sefer. If you ever learn Avodah Zarah, other Masechta, it's a very, very nice Sefer. So he writes like this.
Rabbi, you don't have to encourage Michael. Just jump in.
That's true. That's a good point. So if you look in the Sefer, Avodah Berurah, number five, he writes, I'm sorry, he writes this in number 3. Now, so again, if you stop for a second, let's go back for a second. According to the Rambam, it comes out that Bnei Keturah, Bnei Shmuel, are Mechuyev Mila, just like me and you are. So which means, the Chayyim should come out, that Bnei Keturah and Bnei Shmuel are able to give a Bris Mila. They should be Kasher L'Mila. So if he writes away number 3, he writes, V'tzorach Loimah. The Af L'Das Rambam, Chayyovim L'Mila, he wants to tell you not so. That even according to the Rambam, that Bnei Shmuel and Bnei Keturah Chayyovim Mila, Mikom Ochem Psulim Lomul Yisrael, they still can't give a Bris to a Jew. Why not? Shem de be'inam nami she is mizera Avram. He wants to tell you that even though they're mechuyev, but they're not enough in the parasha to give to another Jew. Why? Because it says in the pasuk va'ato es brisi tishmar v'zarecha acharecha v'nira delozek kivin gamkin rash mashakosu misayim v'zarecha acharecha v'loy nachu. Rashi says in that pasuk v'zarecha acharecha not a guy. The kavanosa b'zeda afilu b'nei ktura dehim b'chal bris. Even though ain't achnami avad b'nei ktura has a chiyav bris. They come walk and psul and they can't give a bris. So he takes away our nafkamina. He wants to say that even if you hold up Bnei Keturah and Bnei Shmuel are mechuyev in a bris milah, they're still not allowed to give. They're mechuyev to get, but they're not able to give a bris milah. Why they're not able to give a bris milah? Because there's a miyat in the Torah that to be able to give a bris milah, you have to be vizarecha acharecha. Now, there's a chayr another pshat you can say to why couldn't Bnei Shmuel have been the ones who gave the bris milah. Maybe is based on the Menachas Chinuch. Menachas Chinuch writes in mitzvah number 4. He writes v'kraksafti. Ubnei Keturah, af l'das Rambam, eina chayovim bepriya. Zokti Menachas Chinuch, that even if you hold like this Rambam, that Bnei Keturah and Bnei Shmuel have a chi of mila, they don't have a chi of priya. They don't have the second step. They just have the cut, they don't have the pullback. V'gam ef sholoim ra'afil l'das Rambam, anachnu am Bnei Yisrael, eina mitzuvim na'aleim lom lo'isam. Then he has another chiddush. That maybe even according to the Rambam, we have no chi of am Bnei Yisrael, eina mitzuvim lom lo'isam, rak Yisrael, nema dvarim elu. Shemizorim zalzev, aleim eina no mizorim. Says the Minchas Chinuch, and so does the Shagas Aryeh, that a Ben Keturah and Ben Yishmael has no Chi of Priya. So I want to tell you, if you accept that notion, so then maybe that's why Ben Yishmael couldn't have given a Bris Mila to a Yisrael. He's really not in the same parasha. We don't have equal Chiyuvim. A Ben Yisrael has Priya and Chatich. A Ben Yishmael only has Priya, so we're not equal. So in order to give a Bris Mila, you have to do both parts. So L'chari, even if you hold like the Rambam, that a Ben Yishmael, Ben Keturah is Chai, maybe a Ben Yishmael still can't give a Bris Mila to a Jew. Why can't he give a bris mila to Jew? Where does he get to? Because Priya is learned from a different pasuk. Priya is learned from a different place. So since Priya is learned from a different place, it's not included in the first din of Avraham Avinu. So if you accept that notion, then the chayre comes out Then we're back to square one. Who were these people that gave a bris to Sipaira's kid? If again, they're not equal chiyuvim, unless you learn that they only did the chaticha and someone else did the priya, it gets very shver. Which maybe that was the Gemara's answer, the second answer of the Gemara, that Sipaira started and someone else finished it up. But l'chayra, this might be a pshat to one.
Maybe in pre-Matan Torah, everyone was on equal footing because the whole chiyuv of milah stemmed from being a descendant of Aaron.
Ah, we're going to see that in a second. We'll see the Maariv Chiyus makes that argument. We'll see in the Maariv Chiyus right now in number 5, right in the Dor, makes that argument. But I'm just assuming kipshutai, that if you want to taina that, like, according to this, that there's a taka, a fundamental difference in the makeup of the chiyuv between a ben keturah and a ben yisrael, so maybe even a ben yishmol wouldn't be able to do the bris milah. If you look at the Maariv Chiyus in Maseches Nedarim, Reb Gifty used to say the Maariv Chiyus is his famous balabas to learn. The Maariv Chiyus was a businessman. The Rashash, not the Maariv Chiyus. Maariv Chiyus was very close to the Chassam Sofer. The Maariv Chiyus used to write letters back and forth to the Chassam Sofer. Maariv Chiyus was a big gadol, 1800s. So the Maariv Chiyus writes like this. Big chiddush. This is a whopper of a chiddush. This is Maariv Chiyus in the Dharm. You got to remember this when you get to Parshas. Where's the story with the Bris Milah Parshas Shmois? Says the Maariv Chiyus like this. Ikka plukta.
By the way, I'm doing this just one for Stewie Wagner specially. And the most contemporary balabas today, I think that you quote, is Rutzka Tzvi. Am I right, Rabbi?
I can't keep track of everything. But Rutzka Tzvi is not really fair because he really has a whole team writing for him. You know that, Mike?
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, you didn't know that, Michael? Okay. He has a team that writes for him.
He's got a whole team working for him doing that?
He has quite a few people that help him out, yeah. Not me. Okay. He didn't ask me to write for him, but I'm just saying he does have people. But in any case, I'm not saying he doesn't do a lot on his own. I can't say that. But I was notified by someone who does help him out with some of the Maariv Chiyus. But in any case.
Does that mean you want Michael to contact him?
Yeah, that was a subtle hint that I'm looking for an additional job to do. Subtle, very
Michael,
subtle hint.
Get on the case.
But in any case. But if you look at the Maariv Chiyus in the Dharm, he writes like this.
Stewie, it's part of my contract.
It's the Gemara says in the Darim that Sipaira tells us the whole story. Sipaira Pasuk says Sipaira took the rock and she gave a bris milah. So the Maariv Chiyus writes this: Ika plukta im isha tucha lomol esatinek. There is a machloikis if a lady can give a bris to her baby. Ulchayre, frak the Maariv Chiyus eich yifarnis haoiser es haisha lomol uvda the Sipaira. If you hold that a lady is not allowed to give a bris milah, how do you read a pasuk in Chumash? Pasuk in Chumash says that Sipaira gave a bris milah to her son. So says the Maariv Chiyus, "Ubi Gemara Shom Hikshu." It's a Gemara. The Gemara asks, "Be'emes mitzipayra." The Tirsu the Gemara answers, "Shom da'asas oshliach." That was the first answer. The Gemara says someone else did it. Ubi Chol Zekash. In fact, Maariv Chiyus, I don't get it. Madua niskra tzipayra beparsha. He says, like, why is tzipayra involved in the whole story of the milah? Tzipayra is not obligated. She's not mechuyev. Why she gets so much attention and focus on the story of the bris milah? V'oid, tareya isha ena mitzuvah lo mubuna. Rakachoy motal alav. It could be he means to ask over here, Tosis and Avodah Zarah's kash, that if a lady is not mechuyev to do a bris milah, how can she hire a shliach to do it? So he writes it this venerely. This Gemara is a right to the Rambam that says the bnei keturah chayovim b'milah. Umidyon hu b'bnei keturah. Zok the Maariv Chiyus, you know why?
Didn't Tzipora give a bris milah to Moshe's son?
Yes, Matis, that's what we're discussing right now. That's what we're trying to figure out, how that was possible. Okay? So how was she allowed to do it? So the Maariv Chiyus says, because the Rambam told us that b'nei keturah mechuyev milah, and Tzipora had a din of a b'nei keturah. Umidyon hu b'nei keturah. V'tzipora shehoise midyon is, hoise chayeves b'milah. So listen to this. So we said that when the Gemara answers, it was done idei acher, it was done through a b'nei keturah. Says the Maariv Chiyus, no. Tzipora was the b'nei keturah. Aye, don't we know women are exempt? The only time there's a difference between men and women, that's in Jewish Mila. But in B'nai Keturah world of Mila, men and women are equal. Aye, Yifei Toya. Umipizeh gam oleho chalachiv k'moy l'moyshe. Gevaldik, says the Maariv Chiyus. It came out that Tzipora was as mechuyev as Moshe Rabbeinu was. Why? Because she was a descendant of Keturah. According to the Rama, B'nai Keturah are chayev. And therefore, Zokter Rambam, she was mechuyev to give her son a bris milah, just like her husband was. They were equal. V'ra'asa shemayshin isra'asha. So once she saw that Moshe Rabbeinu was delaying, amdu molas minay. She stepped up to the plate because she's taka mechuyev. Neishe gam aleh motal achoyev. V'gam hi b'chalo einish v'nachoy. Gevaldik. Sokta Maritz Chiyas. You know why she was able to do the Bris Milah? Because she was from B'nai Keturah. Aisha Keturah? No, that's only a Jewish lady. That's Oisiv Eloi also women on the Smite. But B'nai Keturah women are not on the Smite. Male Sokta Maritz Chiyas. Everything's Geshmak. Now we understand why Tzipora was able to do the Bris Milah as a B'nai Keturah. Now again, she wouldn't be able to do the Priya according to the Menachas Chanuch, but she'd at least be able to do the Chaticha. Now I want to taina, we'll see in a second that we're going to learn in Shulchan Aruch that the Shulchan Aruch holds based on the Rif, that if you have a lady and you have a man, that the man goes before the lady. The only time you're allowed to use a lady if there's no man. So maybe same thing here also. Tzipora was waiting. She wants to see if Moshe was going to do it, because she held that even though she's Mechoyev, she holds a man takes precedence. But once Moshe Ben wasn't doing it, then she stepped up to the plate. Lefiza, that's why Tzipora first waited to see if Moshe was going to do it, and then she acted upon it. Now, the Avoy de Berura gives another answer. He's bothered with the same kasha. If the Gemara answered someone else did the bris, who did the bris? So he comes up with a cute chap. V'ulai yeshloimah, number 6, shahayla l'moshu abeinu evet kanani. Maybe Moshe Abeinu owned a slave. Today, now I say that, be careful, who has a history of owning slaves and get into big trouble. But Moshe Abeinu owned the slave. He owned an evet kanani. Shanimol kedin evet Yisrael, that he got a gebris. V'ihu vade barmilu. And he was a barmilu. V'amrullah shiyomol. So Moshe Abeinu went to Pyre, and Moshe were traveling in the Midbar, they were traveling with their evet kanani. Don't leave home without them. And therefore, the Eved Kanani, who was Gemalt, had a Chiyav. Now, Belina, the next week's shir, we'll talk more about an Eved Kanani. It's a much more lomdish sugya. We'll see how Eved Kanani works in. Because again, if I'm...
Eved Kanani has a Chiyav of a mitzvah like a woman. So
very good. That's Gishmak. We're going to get to that next week. Very, very Gishmak sugya. We'll talk about Belina the next week with the Gansar Reb Chaim. A lot of lomdish, but that's going to have to wait for next week. We're going to try to discuss what its status of an Eved Kanani is. Because an Eved Kanani is Mechoyev Als Mila, Als his master. His master has to give him a Bris Mila. The question is, does an Eved Kanani have to give his children Bris Mila? Let's say you buy an Eved Kanani, so you have to gemal him. Then that Eved Kanani produces children. So do you have to, does the Eved Kanani have to gemal his kids? Or the Chiyav is on the owner of the Eved Kanani? Billy Nether will have to get to that either next week or in a different week. That's one text. But he writes over here, Ach bo'oiz v'hodom istapik. The Efshir, the Eved, da melisha. Maybe not. Maybe Eved's da melisha. He's Mashiach Kaz of Rashi. So Belina, we'll talk more about that in a different share. So again, we have a couple different possibilities to who gave, again, Halach Lamaisa, who gave Eliezer his bris. Was it either Aide Acher, who was the Acher? Either the Acher was B'nai Keturah or B'nai Yishmael, or the Acher was an Eved Kanani, or the Acher was his older brother. Comes along the Chassam Sefer, number 7, and the Chassam Sefer writes this, Adayin Kasha. He has the same Kasha. He goy pas alamol. If you hold the guy's pass to the bris, mi hayezeh shakaris arlas blind. So who did the bris? The same kasha that we had, we quoted from Chaim Kanevsky, Chassam Sofer asked it 250 years early. Who was this ach? So the Chassam Sofer said this. He said, Al-Kenil is deity. Shekishahoy Moshe Rabbeinu b'sakonis nefashis. Someone mentioned this last week, that when Moshe Rabbeinu was in sakonis nefashis, umidis hadin shuri olav, asasa akoponim asha ef shalav v'kar sarlasoy. She did what she had to do. She did what she had to do. Her husband was going to die. So she stepped up to the plate and said, I'm doing what I need to do to save my husband. This did not take away the obligation of Mila. Says that some sort of, it doesn't say she gave him a bris, it says, she cut. And that took away a little bit of Moshe Rabbeinu's sickness. And therefore Moshe Rabbeinu was physically able to finish off the bris without Tavas Dambris. Now you and Moshe Rabbeinu take over. So Chassam Sofer was really Moshe, but Tzipora needed to do something to get Moshe Rabbeinu to feel better, and that cut, that action of cutting, started the whole process. I don't know what to make from this Chassam Sofer, from my humble opinion. It doesn't sound like that from the Gemara. The Gemara says someone else did it. So he wants to tell you that someone else was Moshe Rabbeinu. So what was the significance of doing the cut? The cut was just like Tzipora was showing Hashem that we take your mitzvah seriously, and then Moshe Rabbeinu felt better, and now he felt better, he was able to go do it himself. But Avad Tzipora technically couldn't have done the bris milah. So learns the Chassam Sofer. Then we come to a very difficult Rabbeinu Chananel and Yuma. A very, very shver Rabbeinu Chananel and Yuma. We spoke about this Gemara in Yuma many, many times. The Gemara in Yuma is the makar of Pikuach Nefesh. The Gemara says, how do you know Pikuach Nefesh Deicha Kol Terikula? So the Gemara says, from Mila. We know from Mila. Because Mila is only one part of the body. So Zakti Abayin Chanan, number 8, Pirish. Shemetzinu shahamol hatinik matzila min amisa. We find that giving bris Mila to babies save people from death. Where do you find such a thing? Zakti Abayin Chanan, number 8, Me'eli Ezer, b'noi shal Moshe Abayinu. Shenemar, it says the pasuk by Hiba Derech Mamalo, and they were in the traveling. Vayif Kesheu Hashem, Vayikesh Hamisoy, Hashem wanted to kill him. Vayivakish Hamisoy Litinik. They wanted to kill the baby. Veneshen is Atzlo Soy Ima, because his mom was lazy. Veloy Ma'al Oysay, and didn't give him a bris. His mom? What do you want from his mother? She's not Machuiv. What do you want from his mother? Rabbi Nechanan says the Taina was on Sipaira. Since Sipaira was not acting fast enough, the Kibishar Gisham, she realized this, so then Mala Oisai, she right away gave him a Brismila, the Karach Hassan Domin, the Tzilum and Amisa, and she saved him from death. Now again, he's learning it's going on the baby, not on Moshe Rabbeinu. Rabbi Nechanan learned that the baby was going to die, and it was why? Listen to this Losh of Rabbi Nechanan. Mipnation is Atzlo Ima. His mother was late from giving him a Brismila. His mother? What do you want from his mother? She's not Mechoyev. What's Pshat Rabbi Nechanan? It's a Pella. So L'cheru, you have to say that this Rabbi Nechanan is a beautiful right to the Maritz Chiyas. The Maritz Chiyas told us that Tzipayra was from B'nai Keturah, and B'nai Keturah are Mechoyev to give Brismila. And therefore, not only is she Mechoyev, she's even Mechoyev to give it to her son. And therefore, Taka was a tie-in on her, that she had a Chiyas that she wasn't fulfilling. So L'cheru, this Rabbi Nechanan will be a very beautiful right to the Maritz Chiyas. That you see from over here that B'nai Keturah, Tzipayra had a din of B'nai Keturah, that they were Mechoyev in Brismila. Now, perhaps there's another way to learn this Rabbeinu Chanan, which would still be a mess.
By the way, Rabbi, can't you learn Pshat that being that her husband couldn't do it, she had it. That was the time on her. I don't understand that.
Oh, now, there's only one problem with that. That's Pashas against the Gemara in Kedushin. The Gemara in Kedushin says, Oisoi v'lo yasa, that women have no chiv whatsoever, even if the husband is not around. We'll see we'll see in a second, there's a Marach or a Zeruah that says, like, you'll get to that in a second. Now, if you look over here, number 9, there's a Gemara in Yevamos. The Gemara in Yevamos is talking about a case of a carbon Pesach that wasn't able to be brought, that you weren't able to eat it. You weren't able to be part of the carbon Pesach at the time of the offering, but you were able to be around at the time of the eating. Because we all know there's a time break between when you brought the carbon Pesach and when you ate the carbon Pesach. The carbon Pesach was Nikrav from Ben Arbayim on Erev Pesach, right after Chatzos until Laila, and you ate it at Seizek Chavim. There's a lot of time in between. So you could be Shaykh, you were not able to be part of the carbon at 2 o'clock, but then 9 o'clock when the Seder starts, you're able to bring it. So Gemara says, what's such an example? Gemara in Yevamos, number 9. Gemara says in Yevamos, Rava Amar, Kain Shehayu Ovi V'imai Chavushim B'Beis Asurim. The case over there is talking about where mom and dad are locked in jail. So what? Zok Rashi, number 10, Chavushim B'Shas Asiya. When the carbon Pesach was brought, mom and dad were in jail. And the case over here, and they couldn't give their kid a bris milah. At that time, they had a chiv milah. They couldn't do the Pesach. And someone had to be on their behalf. Now, when they come out, now they're able to give a bris milah. So then, milas b'nai makfaser. They can't bring karm Pesach because now they have a chiv to give their kid a bris milah. Says the Marach or Zeruah, why is it mom and dad are in jail? Why is it the mom and dad are in jail? Who cares about mom? Mom and dad, mom has no chiv mila anyways. Why is it important for us to know that the mom and dad were both in jail and therefore they couldn't give a bris mila? Mom is a non-discussion in mila. Mom is not mechuyev in mila. Zok the Marach or Zeruah. The Marach or Zeruah was the son of the Or Zeruah. So the Marach or Zeruah is number 11. A gevaldik chiddush in hilchas mila. He writes, Ahi the mila zecharav isnayu b'shas achila v'lasnayu b'shas asiyah. The Gemara wants to talk about a case of where someone is in the case of where the time it comes to eat, they were able to do the mitzvah, but not able to do the mitzvah when the time it came to do it. Hasam nami ein motol al acherim la'asek b'milas eshozeh. Frek the Marach Azuro, why don't you say, well, if the parents can't do the meal, so then the mitzvah falls now on Bezdin. Like we learned earlier, the mitzvah falls on Bezin. Says Marach Azur, no, because that mitzvah only is Achayetze of Mibes Asurin, the Nira. The feeling in Shebezdin by his Shait Eloi Mechayvi, Bezin was not obligated yet. Why? Because they were convinced that dad was get out of jail and he'd be able to do the mitzvah. Listen to this Marach Azura. If mom wouldn't be in jail, he Hoysa Chayevis Lasoi. She'd have to do the Brismila. What? I thought we learned women are part of Femila. Zok de Marach HaZeruah, de loy mimayte loy kro elehecha de isa lavua. Says the Marach HaZeruah, the only time a woman is in smite from the din of Mila is when her husband's around. Her husband's around. Then it says, oisoy v'loy osa, she has no chiv. But if dad is out of the equation, then Shitaka has a chiv. It's unbelievable chiddush. that we keep on saying that women are excluded from Mila, women are excluded from Mila, says the Maharal HaZeroa, no. Normally women are excluded. That's when the father is able to do. But if the father would be locked in jail and never coming out, so then the mother would have a chiyuv to give a kid a bris mila.
But maybe it's a different type of chiyuv. Maybe the father's a chiyuv and a maisa mila.
Okay, I'm willing to.
The father has a chiyuv to make sure the bris gets done.
You could debate that. You could debate that even according to the Maharal HaZeroa, it's not the same chiyuv as a father. It would be a different nature chiyuv. I think that's true. You could say that. I think that's a possibility. But I just think this is a whopper of a chiddush according to this Maharal HaZeroa, that when the Gemara excludes women from mila, it's not true. It's not all the time.
Yeah, Rabbi, I'm sorry. So could you explain? So then, according to the Maharal HaZeroa, what does he do with the Gemara and Kedushin of Osaf al Osaf?
That's talking about when the father's around. I mean, the father is the father's here. He's around. He wants to do the bris mila. So then she is not mechuyev. But if the father would not be here, would just be mom, then she would taka would be chayev. That's a bigger kimp than the Gemara, right? It doesn't sound that from the Gemara.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
So then he writes it this is a Gevaldik alumnus. He says, V'loy dobi l'pidyon b'talmud Torah. So one second, why don't we say this by all the mitzvahs that the Gemara in Kedushin says? Why don't we say that the mother is not mechuyev to redeem her son only when the father's around? But if Nebuch the father dies, and Nebuch the father is in jail, so then the mother is a chiyev pidyon ben. Or let's say Talmud Torah. We always keep on saying that women have no chiyev to teach their children Torah. Maybe it depends. Maybe if the father's not around, then the mother does. Says Maharal HaZeroa, no. You know why? Because they're different limudim. He says, because over here there's a different miyot. It's oisoi v'loy asa. Him and not her. That's the whole drasha. Says the Maharal HaZeroa, if that's the drasha, so it's all in context. What's the context? Him over her. But if there's no him, then there's a her. Because all the other drashas were excluding women straight up. There's no women exclusion of mila. It's just, it says, Hashem said to him and not to her. So Zogt Maharal HaZeroa, that's only when there's a him. When there's a him in the equation. But when there's no him in the equation, Zogt Maharal HaZeroa, then she does become mechoyev. The fee, this Maharal HaZeroa, then you understand the Rabbeinu Chananel as well. Everything's very geshmak. According to this Maharal HaZeroa, then you can understand the Rabbeinu Chananel. It was taka tvi on her. Why was it a tvi on her? Because since there was no him, Moshe Rabbeinu was not in the equation, so now she taka has a chiyuv. That's the chayra, what comes out from this Maharal HaZeroa, gevaldik chiddush into the lumdus of mila. Okay, let's move on. This was really supposed to be covered last week. Let's move on now to the Marcheshes. I love an opportunity to quote from the Marcheshes. The Marcheshes was of Chanoi Chenach Egis. The Marcheshes was on the Bezdin of Reb Chaim Moizer. He actually took over Reb Chaim Moizer's Bezdin during World War I. Reb Chaim Moizer had to flee Vilna because it wasn't safe. The Marcheshes stayed. And he stayed on as the Av Bezdin in Vilna during the World War I years. And he was very, very close with Reb Gusman, very, very close with Reb Chaim Moizer. The Marcheshes was Nebuch brutally murdered by the Nazis. A terrible, horrific, horrific, horrific murder. Reb Gusman would not even tell the descendants of the Marcheshes how he was killed because they wouldn't be able to handle it. Reb Gusman saw. Reb Gusman witnessed how the Marcheshes was brutally murdered by the Nazis, and he would never tell, he would tell the descendants of the Marcheshes, I don't even want to tell you what he went through. And he said that, Reb Gusman said this, I mentioned this on Tisha B'Av, Reb Gusman said that all the Asarei Arugin Malchus together did not equal the suffering that the Marcheshes experienced under the Nazis. That was Reb Gusman's comment. That's a very powerful comment to make, and Reb Gusman was a very, very big gadol. So the Marcheshes was one of the great Dayanim in Vilna. So he writes like this, number 12. So he writes, Tuchen ha-chakir, he clears the following chakir, very geshmak ha-chakir. He writes, Im dover ha-osa ba-achila mechshash sakona. Let's say you have a situation where you have a food that you're not allowed to eat it because it's dangerous. Is that considered roi la-achila? Why? Kivin she'ina ba-isser, mitzad isser she'asra teira, ela mitzad sakona. Is that considered that it's really osa to eat? Im kein chosh of roi la-achila? Maybe you look at something that's dangerous. Let's say a guy has high blood pressure, so he's not allowed to eat fatty foods. But Lamaisa, there's nothing really wrong with the food. The food's kosher, but you can't eat it because you have a medical condition. Does that make the food not roi l'achila? Oy Dilma, maybe not. Kivin the self kosof who ain't a roi l'achila. At the end of the day, you can't eat it. Yeah, but nay, is the time. Who cares why? At the end of the day, you can't eat it. Choshev gamkin ain't a roi l'achila. So he wants to tell him, what's an afkimina? They talk about an esrig. An esrig has to be roi l'achila. So let's say you have an esrig that has some form of poison on it. It's poisonous. You can't eat it. But this is not treif, it's not possible. So that's a shayla. How do you look? This is a lomda shayla. When you say something has to be roi l'achil, does that mean physically or does that mean halachically?
Do you look at it could be a shir. If it's in an achil, it's a kizai. If it's in a sakana, maybe even a kosher.
Could be. And a chanami, there might be another nafkamina. So he wants to suggest...
Well, can't you tie this into Chafsa and Gavra? It depends whether you look at the object or the person. It's subjective.
Right, that's the way Reb Shimon explains the difference between the Suri Derabbanan and the Suri Deraisas. Reb Shimon has a famous piece where the Suri Deraisas are considered poison, it's a Chafsa, and the Suri Derabbanan are considered a Suri Gavra. I can't eat it because I'm not allowed to, but it's not intrinsically poison. Yeah, that's the famous word for Reb Shimon and Shayosher. But that again, but the Shiloh that we need to figure out is what makes something unfit. Is unfit halachically unfit or unfit is practically unfit? Okay. The question is, does that make that, again, does that make it that this thing is considered a chefza of unavailability or just means I can't eat it?
Is it unfit for you or right. Is it unfit for everyone?
I'm not sure if it makes a difference necessarily. Just if it's not halachically unfit, so again, we have a mitzvah to be careful. That's true. But let's see how he connects this
like
to our sugya. Oh, that's the question. Is that true? Can Sakana create such a strong? This is negated to a big shiloh we talk about in Basar V'Dagim. Well, you're not allowed to eat Basar V'Dagim together. So there's a whole shiloh, do you have Bittel B'Shishim on Basar V'Dagim? So they say, no, Chamir Sakanta Miyasura. You don't have Bittel B'Shishim with Dagim and Basar. That's a shiloh, big Tomel Nachroinim, if you have Bittel on that. That's always the big shiloh with the sauce. They have the famous sauce, which I still can't pronounce, Worcester sauce that has fish in it. A big discussion amongst the Paiskim, are you allowed to put it on your meat? So the argument is, it's Chayrut Batal B'Shishim. The question is, do you have Batal B'Shishim on something which is dangerous? So against the discussion. Now I think they make
But it's not dangerous. But it's not dangerous.
That depends who you ask. Right? The Magen Avraham says it's not dangerous, because the Rambam doesn't quote it. But many people still assume that it is. The Magen Avraham says it's not dangerous today. Right? That's the Magen Avraham's
fact. Rav Shechter doesn't think it's dangerous.
He's not Makbid at all?
I don't think so.
Yeah. Okay. I heard about a story that he said over a story once. He was by a guy's. I said the story before. He was once at someone's house, and the guy was so makbid with the same fork with fish and meat. The guy was overweight and a smoker. So Shechter said, "I don't know. Fish and meat is a question, but being overweight and a smoker is definitely dangerous. So let's not lose sight on what's really dangerous and what's questionable." Right? The Rambam paskins. The Rambam doesn't bring down this din of fish and meat. Chassam Sofer has a tshuva. Everyone tried to explain why the Rambam doesn't bring it down. So they say because the Rambam was a doctor, and he knew it's not dangerous. But that's the Magen Avraham's Chiddush. I thought people were still makbid today. I don't know. Okay, interesting. But that's the Shiloh. So listen to this Marcheshes. Gevaldike Marcheshes. He connects us to our sugya. That was the galus of these Gedolim. Everything was connected. And to their mind, everything was one big connection of Torah. He writes this. We have our Gemara, where our Gemara said that we have an Ochiv Meisamach Masmila. The guy went to all the brothers who both died because of Mila. So the Aloch is, he doesn't get a Bris Mila. But the Gemara told us he's considered Himal Yimo. So after Marcheshes, Ulechayra, Im Nema Shekosha Ene Roi Mach Masakona Chosha Ene Roi, Frekta Marcheshes, one sec. If you're telling me not doing something because of danger removes you from the Parsha, even though halachically you're in the Parsha, but physically not in the Parsha, Im Ken Amaya Mina Biswal Shemesa Achiv Mach Masmila Vatas Bisi Tishmar Ikav. So Frekta Marcheshes, I don't get it. How do you read Argumar? Argumar said in Avodah Zarah that a Nila, a brother, a fellow whose brothers before him both died, he's considered Himol Yimol, he's commanded Mal Yedamye, he's in the parish of Mila and he can give a Bris Mila. Why? Lemaisa, even though, so you see from the Machesh is where he's getting at. He wants to tell you that just because, that Avada he's in the parish, but he has a Mania because of danger. But that doesn't stop him from being in the parsha. But if you hold that sakana stops you from being in the parsha, so imken amai amina be yisrael shemei sochav machvat amai have a bar bris ha ena roi lomo vavik kimoi de isha. It should be like an isha. Delman dom avatas bisi tishma isha psula mishum delavas mila hachanami arul shemei sochav machas mila lav bar mila. He's not in the parsha of mila. He's completely removed from the parsha.
No, that's not a fair comparison. Meaning the Oral Machmas Achiv.
Yeah.
Anatomically, he still is in the parsha. Just he has a secondary thing that's preventing him from getting a meal, as opposed to a woman. Female anatomy is just not.
Right. But his point is that if you hold that sakana prevents you, is considered that you're not in the parsha, so then he should be not in the parsha because of sakana. If you hold sakana never exempts you from a parsha, so then he has a good taina. So then the Gemara is geshmak. Because he's really in the parsha, he has a sakana that stops him, so sakana stopping you is not considered not in the parsha. But if you're going to go on the side that sakana stops you from being in the parsha, so right, yeah. I hear what you're saying, the tsushal ta'ish is off, but the etzim kasha is still a good kasha. So he wants a taina, el ha-korchoch, muchach mikan, he wants to tell you that, you see from over here, that when a person is excluded from something because of dangerous reasons, he's not really excluded from the parsha. We'll call it a technical difficulty. That's what the Machesh wants to suggest. But then he comes up with a much more pashat pshat. He says, no, it's not a b'chlal problem. He wants to tell him, said the Marchesh, it's not a kasha. Do you know why this guy's considered in the parish of Mila? Not because of his chiv, but because he has a chiv to his children. He has a chiv to his children. And Isha has no chiv to her children, putting aside the Marach or Zeruah. But says the Marchesh, you know why we consider an Achiv Shemesoi a barbarous? Not because himself, but because of his chiv to his children. Since he has
chiv. Which may be the opposite. Maybe he shouldn't have a chiv to his children because he himself is not
mechuyav.
You can say just the opposite.
Right, so you could ask that kasha. Now the Gemara doesn't say that by Mila, that he who is mechuyev is considered to give to his children. The Gemara doesn't have that din. The Gemara has that din by Talmud Torah, right? That if I don't have the chiv to teach Talmud Torah, I don't have to give it to my son. But you don't have that by Mila. So the Torah says you're in the parsha, you're considered in the parsha. Why? Because you have a chiv to your son. Now I just want to start, I know the hour is already late, but I just want to make a haschala on the Mechaber Shulchan Aruch. Mechaber writes, this is number 13. Hakol ksheirim lomo. Everyone can give a bris Mila. Afilu Eved, even an Eved, which we need to talk more about. Isha, that's the way the Shulchan Aruch passes, we saw this yesterday. V'katan. A katan can give a bris milah. Now what's the problem with a katan giving a bris milah? What's the problem? Again, Chaim Kanevsky told us that Gershom gave Eliezer his bris milah, and the Shulchan Aruch passes a katan give a bris milah. I'll leave off with the kasha. How can a katan give a bris milah? We learned that milah is a mitzvah on the father. Now, in order for a katan to fulfill the mitzvah, you have to have shlichus. There's no shlichus l'katan. You can't make a katan your shlich. So how can I, as the father, hire a katan to be my mayol? Ain't shlichus l'katan.
So how? At the end of the day, it's mayol.
Oh, very good. So that we're going to leave off. But now the next week, that's going to be the Tzoyis' answer to the kasha. This is really what we mentioned last week from Reb Lifshitz, the two different types of shlichus. Blineda will talk more about this in Mitzvah next week, and then we'll discuss a little bit more about Ketanim, and then we'll get more into the Lumdus, and we'll see a little bit more about that in Mitzvah next week. Okay, everybody, say have a wonderful week. Stay safe and be well.
You too.
Thank you.
Rabbi, before you hang up.
Yes, Michael.